Hello and welcome back to Biology Today. Today's episode, we're going to talk about the control center, the brain. The part of our body that determines who we are, how we respond to situations, what we feel, how we complete the most basic day-to-day functioning, like functions like breathing and respiration and digestion, and how we move on to slightly more complicated human functions like thinking and memorizing and dreaming and applying logic, etc. How the brain develops and the various ways in which diseases of the brain impact the human body is something that still eludes a lot of us. So today we have with us Professor Aparna Bhaduri from UCLA, who runs a lab that studies the development of the brain from stem cells and also the development of various brain diseases, including brain cancers like glioblastomas. So, without further ado, let's welcome Professor Bhaduri and see what she has to say about brain cancer and brain development. So, Professor Bhaduri, can you tell us what stem cells are?
Sure. Stem cells are cells that are able to make all different tissues. So for example, when you first have an embryo that's developing, you have certain cells that are capable of making every cell type in the body. Now, as you get older, the stem cells become more specific to an individual tissue. So one way in which this applies to my work is we are studying stem cells that exist in the human brain. And these stem cells are not capable of also making heart or lung or skin, but the human brain has many, many different cell types. And these are different types of neurons. There's also things called glia. And these stem cells are capable of giving rise to many or all of those populations.
So essentially, if we observe stem cells in a lab setup, we can figure out how the brain actually develops and how it's created.
That's the goal, yes. So the idea is if we can understand what the stem cells are and how they work, it gives us an opportunity to better characterize what makes us human. So what are the things that make human brain cells unique? And that also is really important for being able to understand how they could potentially be used to treat different disease, injury, degeneration, and also what's happening in brain cancer. So there's a lot that we can do if we look at and study stem cells in the brain.
So when we observe these cells in a laboratory setup, we can see what normal brain development would look like. And then I think we can also track what the development of various cancers would be like, right?
Yes, that's accurate. So in my lab, we use what are called cortical organoids. And these allow us to look at normal brain development. They are basically, it's an amazing revolution, but basically there are stem cells, which are those really amazing stem cells that can make anything. And we give them instructions in a dish to make the developing human brain. And so they start making brain cells, and that allows us to study normal development. And then some of those cell populations seem to be reactivated in tumors. So both by just looking at the tumors, but also by growing tumors in cortical organoids, we can better understand the tumor biology as well.
So obviously you've extensively observed tumor cells and even cultured your own tumor cells in the laboratory. So can you tell us what sort of distinguishes these cells from the normal brain cells and the normal neurons that make up our nervous system?
Yeah, so this is actually a really interesting question and something that we're trying to really understand, because there are parts of the tumor cells that don't look that different from normal cells, but obviously they are different. And then there are parts of the tumor cells that look nothing like anything normal. And so the big question is, how do you go from some of these normal cells, how do you go about creating a tumor? And this is the big question of what is different between the tumor cell and what parts of normal brain function and what parts of normal brain development are the same and then what's different. And this is something that my lab is really excited and focused on to really characterize that, because if we can figure out what's the same, we can potentially figure out what these cells are expected to do. And then if we can figure out what's different, we can decide how to target them in a therapeutic manner in order to treat people and hopefully eventually one day cure them of these very devastating brain cancers.
So like you said, you've been able to see the development of tumor cells from normal brain cells in your lab. So can you tell us a little bit about the different environmental factors or even genetic factors that actually contribute to the development of a tumor?
Sure. And I'll just clarify that we actually haven't yet successfully made tumor cells that are really exactly like brain tumors from normal cells. And I think that that is one important goalpost, because if we can do that, we can understand exactly what happens to make a brain tumor. So this is something that is still being worked on in the field. However, what the goal is to really understand how these tumor cells behave and the different cell types that they make. So one thing that we know about brain tumors is that they're, just like in the normal brain, are many different cell types. And what's crazy is that these cell types are similar and different between different individual patient tumors, and that they seem to change as the tumor grows and invades different parts of the brain. So what we do know about the onset of brain cancer is that there are certain mutations which are similar to mutations that we actually see in other cancers. So things involving P53, which is a very famous tumor suppressor gene, and that tends to get deleted in cancers in general. And that's true in brain cancer as well. And then it's common that there's overactivation, so basically too much of something called EGFR. It's a growth factor receptor that seems to drive additional growth and signaling. Now, there's still a lot of open questions about what causes these mutations and how they maybe have an impact on how the tumors emerge. So in certain systems, for example, skin cancer, we know that these mutations impact the cells that are continuously regenerating the skin, because we always need skin to be regenerated and there's always stem cells that reside in our skin. And so it's pretty easy to go from, you know, one point to another and understand that mutations in these cells, the skin stem cells, can then drive tumor formation. And so that's something that is not exactly parallel in the brain, because we don't necessarily expect there to always be an active compartment of stem cells in the brain. And so one of the questions that my lab is trying to study is, there are some dividing populations that exist in the brain. These are usually glial populations. So these are not neurons, but they're other types of support cells within the brain. And some of those populations do divide. So it's long been thought that maybe those somehow get mutated and go backwards. But we don't have a full understanding of what are the environmental causes that can potentially drive these different brain cancers, or why certain people get them or why other people don't. And so these differences are something that my lab is focused on in understanding. How do adult brain cancers emerge? There's a mutation in a gene called IDH1. And it's really crazy, because mutations in this gene change the metabolism of cells and basically transform them into a cancer. So what is different about normal IDH wild type glioblastomas or brain cancers? Those are the glioblastomas or the brain cancers that my lab studies. What is different about the mutant ones? And then what's different about pediatric ones? Because there are also, unfortunately, childhood brain cancers that also affect individuals. And we also don't understand how or why those emerge, even though we know which mutations are commonly found in those pediatric cancers. So I'm sorry, that was a long-winded answer, but there's a lot to learn about how they emerge. And it's an area that I'm really excited that we have some tools to study now.
Right. And I think it's interesting to know what contributing factors lead up to the formation of a cancer, and especially when it affects the brain, right? Because that can have vast ranging impacts on the body. So so what you said about the mutations, the various gene mutations that can cause the cancer, is it possible for us to identify these mutations in an infant and work towards preventing a cancer? Is that something that's within the realm of possibility?
So what you're saying is, can we understand how the cancers emerge in order to actually prevent cancer onset in the first place?
Right.
Yeah, so this is something that would be really great to be able to do. And I don't know if this is something that will happen in the near future, but I'm hoping that it's something that will result from the work that a lot of very talented labs are working on in this space. There's still a bit of a black box. So for other cancers, for example, there are ways that we can prevent them. For example, we know that sun exposure can drive skin cancer, so we should wear sunscreen. We know that smoking can cause certain types of lung cancer, so if we don't smoke, we reduce our chances. We don't have necessarily the same parallel in brain cancer. And the more we understand about how it emerges, the better we'll be able to do in terms of figuring out what types of preventative measures or even what types of early stage scans we can do to potentially treat or prevent the cancer in the first place.
Right. And you'd mentioned glial cells and how that leads to glioblastomas. And I remember in sixth grade, we'd studied how neural cells are stuck in their stage of development and we have a fixed number of neurons and they don't divide. So is it just glia cells that can become cancerous, or is it even other types of brain tissue and neurons that can sort of become cancerous and lead to the formation of a tumor?
Yeah, this is a really interesting and active area of study. So when glioblastomas were first discovered, people called them glioblastomas because they looked a bit like glial cells. And for a long time, people assumed that they probably come from these glial populations. Now, I'll give you a little bit of a background in cortical development, or the development of the cells in the cortex, which is where the majority of glioblastomas emerge. The cortex is the outermost layer of the human brain, and it is also what is most different between the human brain and other species, such as mice, as well as primates. Now, that's important that it's different because it means that some of the development that happens at a different speed. And there may be also certain cell populations that are, there's more of them in the human than there are in these other species. So when you make the human brain, you have what's called radial glia. And these are the neural stem cells of the cortex. And they have these long processes and they are able to divide and create neurons. And these so first they make an intermediate cell that's called an intermediate progenitor cell, and then those differentiate into neurons. These neurons migrate up the scaffolding. So I mentioned that these radial glia have these long processes. So the neurons migrate up that and become the neurons that are established. And as you mentioned, it's relatively well accepted that once you are done developing your neurons, you're not going to get more in life. You're not going to make more.
Right.
After the radial glia, after the radial glia are done making the neurons, they then switch to what's called gliogenesis. That's the process of making the astrocytes as well as some of the oligodendro precursor cells, et cetera, some of the other populations that do have the capability of dividing. Now, as we have learned more about glioblastoma, we see that there are not just signatures of glia that exist. So there are some signatures of astrocytes and oligodendrocytes, but there are also signatures of other things, including radial glia and including neuron populations. So the question is, where do these cells come from? Now, there's a couple different models. You could have these glial cells that basically what's called de-differentiate, so they kind of go back in time and then make the radial glia, which then go about making the neuronal populations because they've kind of been regenerated. That's one option. A second is, what if there is what's called a quiescent or kind of a sleeping population of radial glia that we hadn't previously detected that exists in the brain, and that's the population that gets activated and starts the whole thing? Or what if it's a combination where in some cases it's one thing and in other cases it's another thing, or even in the same tumor, you know, you create an environment that is optimal for a tumor and then multiple cell types give rise to it. And the more we learn about glioblastoma sometimes, the less we realize we know. And in this case, we thought we knew that these definitely came from glial cells. And now I think we're not so sure. And so this is actually something that my lab is focused on, understanding where these tumors actually come from. And it would be really important and interesting to help us understand not only how to potentially prevent these cancers, but also how to treat them if we can know where they come from.
Right. So given what you said, that sometimes when we're researching cancer, and I think biology in general, when you find new information, it actually leads to more questions. Mm-hmm. Where do you think stem cell research and neurobiology research is headed in the coming years?
Yeah, great question. So in general, I think there's been multiple revolutions in the field over the last 5 years. Our technology to be able to grow stem cells in a dish has just gone from a very challenging thing that only a few small groups could do to something that anyone can do. And similarly, in neuroscience, we're learning so much more about what cell types exist because of the ability to look at cells one at a time. This is a process called single cell sequencing. And as I mentioned, there are very many different types of cells in the brain. So if we can look at them one at a time, it gives us an opportunity to really dissect that, the individual identities of these different populations and understand what they do. So with these technologies, I think we're getting improved access to what the normal human brain looks like, as well as what the disease impacted human brain looks like. And I think that this will completely change our understanding in order to make much better therapeutics. And so I think we're on the cusp of that right now. And I think that the combination of improved technology to study neuroscience, as well as improved technology to grow stem cells, is going to, in the next 5 to 10 years, really enable us to treat a lot of different things that we never thought we'd be able to treat using stem cells and using things that we are gaining from these new technologies. So I think it's a really exciting time to be studying neuroscience and to be working with stem cells.
Right.